Hello.
Hello.
Astraea.
Jade.
Ink Fox and Paper Tiger continues with part two of Poppy Opossum.
The second third.
Today we read chapter six to the end. Would you like to take us through chapter six?
Yes. So chapter six, we're both kind of building from the aftermath of chapter five. Poppy is having difficulty with her daughter Lily. Quick recap of five. Our possum protagonist destroyed a dragon, or at least attempted to. Has a lot more questions about stuff. We found out that she's weaker than she projects. Now she's trying to go about her daily business, but events seem to be conspiring to get her more involved in local politics. She's been invited to see the queen.
We love Kit Darling so much.
She's so cute.
She's so fucking cute. And on page three of chapter six, it's when they begin to lay on some not so subtle hints. It's like, yeah. the letter is signed love.
Yeah,
and it's scented. It's like, and I don't remember where it is, but like somebody points out that Poppy comes back from the castle with different bandages than she went there with. I don't remember which chapter that was in, but it does happen. It's like, I was like, am I just being a furry about this, or are they going for, okay, yeah, they're going for that.
No. Which sets up sort of one of the recurring gags I really like in this, which is that Petunia 100% believes that Poppy and the Queen are definitely dating, which would come as a surprise to Poppy, maybe not the Queen, and sets up our gang, and because she has five VIP passes, Poppy does, to go to this big royal gala where the queen's sister, who is apparently some kind of double queen,
the high queen, the extra queen,
yes, is going to be making an appearance at a festival.
A festival that Kit Darling is entirely unprepared for, because she has spent her days in her laboratory doing more and more tests on cancerous tissue.
Using the god blood that she got last chapter.
Strongly implying that she did sign that deal, after all.
There's a couple bits of these pages I really like. That the festival has this horrible, horrible float.
Why is he there?
Well, because it's supposed to be, you know, showing past royalty and stuff, okay. I guess. Nobody likes the balloon. I don't like the balloon.
I don't like the balloon. I sure as hell don't.
Details of Kit's lab. I love how her glasses dematerialize because they're magic.
I also love that you can see on page five, you can see her fake lash falling off because she's been there for so long.
Yeah. Oh my god.
This poor baby.
Yeah, she's trying so hard. And of course, Friedrich goes, I'm going to ignore the fact that you took 3 minutes to say a five-word sentence. Please just get ready, Your Highness.
Oh my god.
Oh, Friedrich. That guy's so dead.
Who among us hasn't done 11-hour lab days or longer? Yeah, I sure haven't. Oh, this just takes me back to some terrible moments.
Yeah, definitely don't think of... I'm definitely not thinking of the time I got an hour of sleep before finals presentation back in my art student days.
Oh yeah, some of my darkest moments were during my lab days. But let's move on, shall we? As the gang amass at the city gate for the party or for the festival, We have this adorable thing on page 8 with Petunia's outfit and all the prices of each the thing prices. She's wearing.
Yeah.
The Mishan boater hat, 5,000 nibbles. The Tearstone earrings, 15,000 nibbles. The Poochie handbag, 12,300. And then this is immediately followed by Boris's cap from chapter 2. Worn scarf, stolen probably. No underwear, free. And then you have Halia in the background doing her jazz wings.
Yeah. Halia suddenly becomes a character in this chapter.
This is an amazing bit. Which page was it? Page 4, where Mary dejectively says, why not? Halia is a background character and she got invited, which is a fun fourth wall break, except that Halia seems to have taken that remark personally and is just in the background doing gags for this whole chapter, which I thought was really funny. Like in the very next panel there, you could see her peeking behind the speech balloon.
Oh, I didn't even notice that bit. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really clever.
It seems to be making an attempt to simplify the backgrounds a little bit in most of the shots.
A little bit. Yeah. The backgrounds are really elaborate. It's important to... This is just a comics thing, period. Not every panel needs to have a background.
Oh, yeah, totally.
It's okay if a panel is just an abstract thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is less of a criticism and more I'm trying to pay attention to sort of the arc of how the art and the comic is going.
Uh-huh.
Because this is sort of something that is starting to be, that especially with the next chapter, becomes increasingly apparent.
I really love, like, we have the bit with Petunia thinking that Poppy and the Queen are dating. And it's this chapter, I think, that really shows the contrast between Petunia and Poppy. Because, like, one is a deeply neurotic, yet otherwise totally secure bachelorette. And the other is a single mom with a literal heart condition that is somehow chill as hell. And yet these two bounce off each other amazingly.
Yeah, they have
almost nothing in common.
And they're just such a great pair to bounce off each other. Like,
yeah.
Like all the stuff that Petunia is being put through because of Poppy and also herself. I think basically all of her problems are from herself.
Yeah. I also love this bit on page 11 where she and Mary are trading hot goss. It's like, really anything that involves Mary I like, but the fact that these two get to just be catty cat bitches.
Yes.
And each other.
And in the category of, all ages comic, them basically arguing about what about who would be on top.
Even in their fantasy, Friedrich has to be the step stool.
Yes, Friedrich is literally the step stool.
Because Kit is like 3'0". It's so yes. funny.
Like Poppy's the submissive type.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You notice also on this panel, they've drawn the lips to be a bit more visceral and a little bit ugly.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like, how close and uncomfortable yes. can we make this?
And then Petunia's combination of terrified and seemingly turned on. In these
oh, also, God.
Yeah, what you talking this, about? Poppy yeah. making out with Queen Darling.
Right. Oh, cool. I love politics.
Oh, cool. I love politics.
I fucking love these three girls. They're yeah. so great. Oh, I kind of wish the comic was just about them. Moving on to page 12, we have Kit being ready for the ball and also extremely not ready for the ball. She's so tired she almost falls down the stairs.
Been there.
Oh God, I've been there so much. Also, I mentioned last time, but Kit and Friedrich's costumes in this chapter were designed by Kinesha C. Bryant, who's a also a comic artist. I don't know if anybody else's outfits were. I know that those two were specifically, and I think they both look very cute.
I know there were like characters who didn't appear who were purchased adopts who never actually made it into the comic. I don't know if right. any purchased adopts were in the comic at this point.
Which, I mean, like some viewers might not know, in furry culture, adoptables are like character designs that you can just buy from another artist that are just, they're specifically designed to be sold, not yeah. really written with anything in mind.
Friedrich and Poppy are very opposite in many ways, except both of them kind of serve a similar role to Kit,
yeah. right?
Because Friedrich is catching Kit as she's falling down the stairs.
Yeah.
Poppy is clearly bracing to catch Kit while she's falling down the stairs.
Yeah. Also, there's this throwaway line of, "Your Majesty, please be more careful on the stairs. We don't want another accident this month now, do we?" Yes, you're right. Poor Gustav. Implying that Gustav was had some kind of disaster and now is actually dead.
The coffee gags are... She's drinking a pot. She is drinking out of the pot. She is not drinking a cup.
Yeah.
And there is...
I can't help but wonder if this particular composition was ripped from some old magazine illustration. It kind of looks like that.
Yeah, this does look like an ad. And multiple empty pots of coffee discarded to the side of her as if she has just been hitting these.
Yeah.
They also say that her family has an aeroplane.
The big metal flying machine. Aeroplanes are a thing in this universe. And also, I noticed the Lagomorph automatons in the background more. I can't help but wonder, the fact that those are so present, I can't help but wonder if those were meant to be used later in the story.
We'll get to that.
We'll get to that. It just makes me think of, have you ever played Dishonored?
Yeah, of course.
Do you know Dishonored 2 and the Clockwork Soldiers? One of my favorite parts of the Dishonored series. I'm just a sucker for expensive death machines that rich people seem to own.
I mean, that's just called real life.
Yeah, true. But they don't usually walk and talk, do they?
No.
No. Page 14 shows us that Lily is still going through it. And this incredible two-panel thing of, "Lily, don't be rude. At least give the queen a nice smile." Lily.
Yes, Lily is having none of it. Lily is having none of anything in this chapter because she's still upset at her mom.
And Lily is finally a character.
Yes, because she now understands how much bigotry there is against possums. And also that she's going to die at 30.
Yeah, and how few possibilities there actually are in her life, which... is dark, but it's something for the character to do instead of just saying cute things every now and again. I like that a lot.
It's very realistic to child development too, I think. The point where you start to at least get some glimmer of this. Poppy keeps insisting, possibly facetiously, she went through the same phase at the same time. I'm not sure, I think it's directly contradicted later with the actual facts we find out about Poppy's life.
Right.
Unless she's referring to the same thing being the death of her parents.
Perhaps. Why don't you take us through the next few pages?
We find out why Poppy has changed her mind to become the possum ambassador, something she previously turned down, because it wasn't a responsibility she thought she could do. She didn't want to be responsible for people. But we find that she has something. She takes heart medication. The thing is, it was created by Kit. And Poppy literally owes her life to Kit. And then she hands Kit the pill. And then eats the pill out of Kit's finger.
And Petunia sees this immediately.
Yes, immediately.
Oh, your highness, it's been so long. Look at you. You've gotten so big. And Kit just politely says, "I'm not good with faces."
Yes, Mr. Quibble has done the old guy thing of, "I remember you."
Yeah, and Kit literally cannot see his face, so.
Yeah.
And then on page 18, there are two rather chilling things that Kit's conversation points out. One is that Petunia sounds just like her mom, Rose Ronnie.
Yeah.
Which sets Petunia off, one thing. And another thing, if we look carefully at Mr. Quibble's face, you can see there's a scar underneath his mustache.
Those look like cat scratches on his scar. There is a thing, notably, that when Petunia yells she's nothing like that woman, we've had gags where somebody shrieking could break stuff before. It does. Friedrich gets a nosebleed from the force of the yell, which I think is supposed... which other stuff later in this chapter is... Yeah. Petunia is not just a regular gal.
No. Although you probably added that up by now, is that there's something weird about Petunia Quibble and her vow of pacifism, that she is holding back way more than just terrifying anxiety, although that is certainly part of it.
I think literally every character in this series has some horrifying detail in their past that's supposed to be a later plot twist.
Except perhaps Mary, who just seems to be Mary.
Oh, nope.
Really?
Yeah. Weird. No, yeah.
Okay.
Well, again, cool. Well, that's not this section, but no.
There's also page 19 where Kit says, "I don't think your friend is a real nun. What tipped you off?" "Well, I see the composition of her stains." And Petunia says, "She's just saturated with booze." Oh, thank God.
Petunia being actually worried about it is very worried funny.
Worried that Mary might have worn a cum-drenched jacket to the table. Oh my God. This is all ages, right? All ages.
All ages. All ages comic.
I don't know. It baffles me, but who cares? It's not getting adapted into a movie or a TV show anytime soon, so it doesn't really matter.
I don't know. Maybe Poppy will get finished in a cartoon years after the fact. It's happened before.
Maybe they'll get a movie on Adult Swim. We have on page 20, referencing what I said about Holly as being a background character. She literally walks from the background to the foreground in these three panels.
Yeah.
which ends the joke, which I thought was really funny.
because Kit says she needs an assistant. And Halia is perfect for the job.
That takes us to page 21 with the Canopy Fruit Bearing Festival, which is the big shindig going on, featuring delicious food, games and prizes, lifetime bands, and giant bugs.
Which is the first thing that like breaks through Lily's icy exterior she gets to ride the cricket.
I do like the giant roly-poly that she gets to roll around.
The giant roly-poly is very cute. And very fun.
We have page 23, which I want to point out something about page 23. A couple things, actually. When you're making comics, double-page spreads are really, really hard. Because in a physical book, at least, you need to accommodate for the seam that will exist in the binding. So whatever you compose will have to fit nicely on two pages. In this case, though, because it's a webcomic, there's no reason to do a double page spread. In fact, it's a disadvantage because it takes up more space and it will probably break whatever vertical format you're using. So this is just to show off. This is a well-earned flex. Also, we see that Aeroplane is not an airplane, but a literal flying geometric plane. suspended in the air, which is a fun subversion.
There's a lot of great little design details here, too. There are these symmetrical spheres that have spires going in both directions and poking out holes on the top and bottom. This thing descends through the sky, seemingly, and the other side of the hole is blue.
Not pink, which is interesting. Yeah. Suggesting that it came from somewhere very, very far away. There's the fun throwaway line of "no slip Slylock." Like Slylock Fox, the newspaper comic? Is he canon with this universe? I don't know.
Well, it's Mary. She breaks the fourth wall.
I mean, the fourth wall breaks an awful fucking lot in this comic. Yeah. The design of the aeroplane and it coming in through a blue hyperspace gate gives me really big Homeworld vibes, if you've ever seen or played
Homeworld. Oh, Homeworld, yeah.
Yeah, just like, I can picture it making the exact same noise, like that distinctive... noise that the engines make in Homeworld. That's immediately what my mind went to.
Yeah. When you put it that way, I can totally see that. Especially like one of the features of Homeworld was that it had intentionally non-aerodynamic designs for most of the ships.
Let's see. There's a bit here. Arthur Cicadino has been invited to the Queen's table for this festivity. Unexpected. There was a throwaway gag at the end of that one chapter where Poppy had stomped his flower bed, so she owes him 9 nibbles, And yes. he just, and once she does it, he's totally chipper and cordial again. Yeah. All the atmosphere disappears, which I think is like part of his menace, that he's actually quite good at being polite.
He's just forgiving enough in very key circumstances. A big thing he does is he implies that if you deal squarely with him, he'll deal squarely with you, which is not true.
Right, but it's important that the illusion be maintained.
Yes, Valente looking terrifying with the metal beak.
Yeah, but also just as cool, I gotta say. Valente looks just as cool. Halia, you're so reliable. Your plumage looks real sharp today, Halia. You could spend the night at my place, Milo.
I love who the hell is Milo? This is Halia talking about this. She said, she's saying that Valente said you could spend the night at my place, Milo, to her, and she apparently came out as trans to Valente.
It took me a sec to parse these sentences because, like, wait, did I miss who Milo is? I was like, no, Milo just got introduced here.
Yes, and who the hell is Milo?
I asked myself that same question for 20 years of my life.
Oh boy.
Valente is gay, and Halia is trans, and the story will just bulldoze over these things because it's like, it's just part of the world. That's one thing that I appreciate is that despite all the horrible racial stuff that this comic does not shy away from, gender and sexuality are totally normal. No one cares.
Nobody gives a shit.
It's not a big deal.
Well, except Valente is not into women.
Yeah, that's all there is.
Yeah, I think that's really... I think it's also really funny that he's evil, but also he, like, well, you are definitely a girl, so I'm not into you.
It's really mean on one end. It's really validating on the other end.
Yeah.
I cannot help but wonder, like, the fact that this chapter especially is ramping up all the gender and sexuality overtones... I can't help but wonder if that was intentionally, like, ramped up to spite people who complained about the comic. Because, like, Everett mentioned that in an author's note a while back. I was like, fuck yeah, I'm down for that approach. just make it gayer and gayer and gayer as you go along.
And it does get gayer and gayer as it goes along.
It does. This doesn't stop here either.
They have a fucking Polly character later, too.
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah. So page 28. There's a couple of things worth mentioning here. Do you want to cover them or should I?
Yeah, I can do this. We're starting to get into the politics, but Poppy being an advisor, which also, Chikadino is the prime minister, Poppy has a better looking seat, and not just because Chikadino uses a perch instead of a seat, but it's right next to Kit. Like, Chikadino might be the new prime minister, but Poppy is who Kit trusts.
Yeah, Poppy is the star.
And again, Friedrich's on her other side. Friedrich and Poppy have these parallels again.
Yeah, so only they are in the shot with the queen.
Yes.
Only the possums are in shot with the queen.
And, yeah, these next couple pages start establishing... So, hey, Kit's actually serious about this. Also, Kit has made a deal with Chikadino... both giving him political power to be prime minister and also putting their energy resources in with Chikadino. Friedrich instantly tells some subordinate, hey,
get ready.
Yeah, so that's probably going to happen. Then the High Queen teleports in.
Yeah, who is vastly more popular. The crowd love to cheer for her, or they give Kit just a few polite claps. Yes. But they hoot and holler for the queen, Queen Vix Darling.
The introductory panel for Vix, it's this gorgeous composition.
And incredible.
We're looking up at her, like she is towering above us. We've pretty much always been above Kit, but Vix, we are below. She has... an incredibly elaborate outfit with... Is that like water in her hair bobble? Gardens growing off of her dress. Kit is on a video screen distantly in the background looking dejected. Vix has a scepter with some kind of bonsai that's like floating on a disc. Like it's got a tree on both sides on this flat disc of earth that's in her globe. It'll make sense why I'm calling this out. And also a very shadowy fox lady behind her and a very sickly fox man and a close up. Yeah, of course Vix has a lucky star power, although this looks less like a star and more like a rose.
Right. I also like how it's not just that there's a miniature star, but despite that, the inside of the ship is very dark, very shadowy.
Yeah.
It's clearly like the atmosphere is completely different. She is not in this royal chamber is not the giggly princess kind of chamber. Vix Darling is all business and all gardening.
And all and seemingly very dangerous too.
Extremely dangerous. And we see immediately why that is. It's that this festival is for not just like literal food fruit, but the fruits of life. As mentioned by Eulala in a previous chapter, the harvest power of Grand Flora makes it blossom whenever she wants it to, which is let's unpack this for a second, shall we?
Yes, there's a lot. There's a lot.
This might be one of the most overpowered superpowers I've seen anywhere in any piece of fiction. Not just because, imagine the political grip you would have on a country if you decided when they ate food, if you could decide if they had a crop or not. But also with the extra twist in this universe of this is how a lot of people have their children.
Yes.
Through the fruit. Imagine the sickening potential for someone to say, I decide whether you breed or not in this universe. It is at once impressive, terrifying, giveth and taketh away in so many respects. It is an absolutely hideous thing for a single person to have control over. Oh, it's sickening. It's like it's effort is extremely good at illustrating how things can be beautiful and disgusting at the same time.
And we also every time Vix speaks. It emphasizes her fangs, which are much more prominent. Like they're not cute little fangies; they're predatory. And the contrast to with the joy people are feeling about the fruit and just how obviously menacing the royal family actually is.
And it also sells that the racial harmony angle that Kit pushes. Is something that her family shares, but for the opposite reason. It's because they want the locals to be integrated into the empire, not because they don't value racial harmony for any kind of ethical or moral reason. They value it for a practical reason. The less infighting in their sprawling empire, the better.
Yeah.
It's very Roman, actually. The Romans did not particularly care where someone came from as long as they subjugated to the Roman Empire. If you spoke Greek and you were useful, then they wouldn't care.
Do the right rituals to the right places, pay the right taxes, and serve the right fealty, and they really didn't care about any other detail.
The Romans were really weird. But that there's a whole podcast about that called The History of Rome that I'd really recommend people listen to.
Yes. Apologies.
Anyway. I am stunned at how well this comic's theme and tone keep carrying. I'm really refreshed. I'm just gonna say this: furry comics aren't usually this good. Furry comics aren't usually this well written or well detailed. I'm really surprised.
Yeah.
Our genre's standards aren't very high.
Like it's not a competition necessarily, but Everett is beating a lot of cartoonists I've seen. Like the layers, the consideration to every fucking panel.
Speaking of panels, we see a close up of Kit's father and her awful stepmother. She has a literal evil stepmother, which I thought was kind of funny.
And also worth noting that during all of this, a sheep whose lucky star power is that the sheep's wool is literally steel wool.
Pharaoh fur, it's called.
Yeah, pharaoh fur. attempts to assassinate Vix, Poppy's going to leap into action, except it doesn't matter, because Vix can make things wither too.
Yeah. Giveth and taketh away.
And can seemingly deactivate Lucky Star powers.
Yeah. Which is extremely unusual from what we've seen. Lucky Star powers seem to be like their own separate category of magic that isn't easily touched. Also, if you look at page 35, did you notice that Vix's thumb and pinky are exactly the same size, like a paw?
Oh.
She's just less human than the others. She's less anthropomorphized than the others.
And
there's a teleporter built into her sleeve.
I'm not sure it's a teleporter. I think the lucky star power of her gorilla like bodyguard is that he can fit into things.
Oh.
Because he has a lucky star that gleams.
Oh, that's right. He's gleaming too. Okay, that's super impressive.
Yeah. And
I didn't notice that last time I read this.
I didn't notice it till this time because I had just assumed, oh, it's some magic bullshit. But it's like, no, there's a lot of emphasis here on the star. And they mentioned that he's always in a different place and it doesn't use the teleport effect.
Oh, that's right. That doesn't use the space warp.
Yeah, because the teleport is a very sci-fi, Star Trek-y, actually probably more like Homeworld or Battlestar Galactica kind of space bends around.
Yeah, very wormhole looking effect. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is just the girl's literally in a sleeve.
He's just in the sleeve. He's finally back and about time too.
This really is Dubious Call.
Dubious Call. Oh, no one's going to get Dubious Call. That's a joke just for us.
That's a joke just for us. Hopefully, some of the people who get that joke will listen.
I hope so. So which page does that leave us on? Page 36.
Poppy notes that Kit's sister just killed a guy. You see the mechanics of the fruit, where it is literally some kind of, like, they're uterus-shaped, and there's an
umbilical cord and everything.
Yeah, and the function of this, because there's a pig and a sheep, and they're cradling the kid, in case you didn't get that's what this worked, and how this worked, and then the queen's just like...
And she's out.
I'm gone. Kit is falling asleep, and also stressed out. So stressed.
Yeah, mentioning that people try to assassinate her family all the time, just because, you know, they're royals, they're strategically valuable. Petunia's like, the queen's spoon-feeding her right now, in front of everyone.
Yes, Poppy's getting a spoonful of persimmon pudding.
Which sounds delicious.
Yeah.
I think I'd enjoy persimmon pudding if I could have it.
I'd give persimmon pudding a shot.
I think we cut ahead to the conversation between the stepmother and Kit. The very, I would call this loaded in many ways. Her father's condition has gotten worse, and Kit is the one responsible for engineering the cure. And it's not going well.
Yes, she's getting really, really, really desperate.
Yeah, this is why she overworked herself before this party. The stepmother is prepared to slap Kit with all the force of a thousand suns, and here comes Poppy Opossum, anti-magic field generator, to shake her hand and make it not happen at all.
Poppy getting spirally demented eyes, showing her fangs, and also the carnival prize she won earlier is in her tail, that she's been carrying with her tail, is getting crushed. Just absolutely crushed by the force of her possum tail.
Friedrich lets on that he knows more about Petunia than Petunia lets on.
Petunia is a martial arts master.
And then Friedrich gets ahead of both of us and says, just decides to demonstrate how good Petunia is at martial arts by throwing sand at Poppy's face. And Petunia catches every single grain of sand, which is like something straight out of fucking Wuxia films.
Yeah, it's so cool.
Right before Kit's father starts to, I guess, hallucinate and scream.
Kind of the opposite.
Yeah, super lucidity, the doctor
calls
it.
Yeah, he has super lucidity.
Yeah, he becomes far too aware.
Yes.
yelling Skyhenge activation. He says something like that. Now, they've mentioned Skyhenge before, that Skyhenge is like some kind of location. I think Boris says, I'll knock you all the way to Skyhenge or something. Either way, this is some kind of fit that he's clearly not supposed to be having. When he briefly regains cogence when he talks to Kit and says, hello there, little princess. And she introduces him to Poppy. And he says, you got a new pet possum. Which is, he has some very old-fashioned ideas. He's from a different time.
He's from a different time, although it does mean that briefly Petunia has a brain break from imagining Poppy in a collar on a leash. In a clearly kink situation,
Yeah, but this is obviously too much. And then to cap matters, Poppy has the horribly insensitive line, I've been pretty good. At least I'm not stuck in a chair, I suppose. Which is, that is probably the straw that breaks Kit Darling's back.
Poppy's outbursts, like previously, were always cute and they usually worked out. They increasingly are not working out, as the comic is going.
Poppy Opossum wearing her heart on her sleeve means she is actually quite insensitive to the needs of others at key moments.
Yeah,
she does not seem to really pay that much attention, or at least less than she should. Which is strange to me, because like she displays real emotional intelligence in lots of places, but then in other places she just drops the ball.
And then she sort of turns around. Kit is walking up the stairs, clearly out of it. She still hasn't slept. She slips
down
the stairs.
She bumps into a character who we'll see in a later chapter.
Yeah.
So what if I haven't slept in 60 hours and everyone thinks I'm a joke? So what if I can't find a cure for my dad and other people have to sign away their lives for him? So what if I let them turn off the dragon bell and dozens of people died and it was all my fault? Which is the first moment we hear that. That's a very dangerous little detail. We did not know that that was her doing. Or why.
And also now she slips and it has a little Freddy's fun fact, Friedrich. I told you to be careful on the stairs.
On the stairs, idiot. And then there's two whole pages where Kit Darling falls down the stairs and just cries her eyes out on national TV. I felt so bad.
Oh.
I felt this particular couple of pages really bad. Oh, she's so pathetic.
I agree. I do just have to mention, looking that it's 2016, I told you about the stairs, idiot, is definitely a Homestuck reference.
Oh, yeah, certainly. Yeah. I warned you about stairs, Kit.
I warned you about the stairs, Kit. It keeps happening. Yes, but yeah, I do feel for her. She's so cute, and she's trying so hard. So much less of a bastard than the rest of her family. She genuinely just wants to help and can't help.
And then we have pages 53 to 56. A couple of key things happen here. One, through looking at the reflection in Poppy's eyes, Kit Darling can see her own face for the first time in her life, which I thought was quite touching and quite beautiful.
Yeah.
Two is that Poppy starts opening up about how difficult it is to actually raise Lily, because she has no idea what she's doing when it gets right down to it. Something that Lily does here.
And Lily, I think, gets a little out of this, too, as we see later, because Lily starts softening up to her mom.
Just a bit. Yeah. So I don't know if there's actually a term for this, but this is a story technique that I like to call the drunk at the party conversation, where two characters find a private moment to open up to each other, no matter what other insanity is going on. They connect to one another deeper than they have, and they might not speak of it ever again. I really like these moments in stories when we just have a moment to chill and think about it and be honest with each other, and we don't have the obligations of being characters in front of other characters. I find it really sweet. If you've ever played a game called Wandersong, there's a moment like this that I like a lot. But moving on. Why is Mary naked?
Why is Mary naked? Why'd you take a whole hour just to go pee? Because that's what
Petunia Mary, said. You know this is best behavior by my standards. she's great. And Mary doesn't appear for much more later in this comic, and I hate that. I wish Mary had a bit to do in every story, but no, they turn away from her for a bit. And we won't see very much more of her before the comic ends, and that's drag. I love Mary.
And yes, more evidence, Poppy carrying, helping Kit down the stairs. Petunia's convinced this is
lesbianism. And then when she actually raises this issue, Poppy says, Petunia, come on, she's the queen. And more importantly, what would Poppy's husband think? Oh, I don't have a husband. If I did, don't you think I would have invited him? So that means...
He proposes to Poppy.
Wait, no, that's insane.
Yeah,
you gotta go on
at
least two dates before you get married. And then it's like the lesbianism just keeps going.
Yeah. I love that she says, Friedrich, clear out my next week's schedule. I want to go on a 5-day date.
Hey, Lily, if mommy plays her car, right? You're gonna have two cool moms.
Both, I think it does feel something for Kit, but there is a motivation that she needs to provide for Lily.
That was year three of Poppy Opossum.
That was fucking year three. That was year three. One thing I'd like to call attention to that I think is one of the funnier that is a funny, understated metagag of this is in any other story that introduces the giant float, that would be an important Chekhov's gun to the chapter as opposed to just repeatedly scaring Petunia.
It's just a gag.
It's just a gag. The year three illustration, there is an illustration saying, oh yeah, this is year three, which, God, that's a lot of comics for 3 years. This has every single character who, at least every single semi-named significant character in the comic on one page. And it mentions in the description that's over 130 characters, including some who hadn't appeared in the comic.
And they all stand out. They're all distinct. Everett's an amazing character designer, and I have no doubt that it's probably one thing they went to school for. But holy fuck. Holy fucking shit.
Yes. Also, why did you... Also, there is that continuing, you went so hard on a commemorative image.
You didn't need to do this to yourself.
Yeah.
But they did. And that takes us to the Friedrich intermission. And the on the page for the cover... The only author's note is, ha ha, time for plot. Are you ready for plot?
I've noticed as we're going, the story has become more compressed. Which I think is good for it.
I think that's very good. I'm not completely without criticisms of it, but we'll get to those.
Yeah, no. We'll do that. But here we have an intermission where we're moving... Very quickly.
Page one, panel one, he literally kisses Kit goodnight, which might be the single cutest thing in the series so far, but it's double great because this is genuine affection that it feels like he doesn't need to show. And it also cements that Kit is just, she's just too much of a darling for the position she's in. Like, the fact that someone kisses her goodnight kind of tells you that, no, she's not the kind of person who should be here.
The fox ear nightcap nightcaps covering her ears.
It's so cute. It's so cute. It's a fun detail, too, that on page 2, you can see that Friedrich's shirts are custom patched. He does not just tie off the sleeve like a lot of people would. They're specifically stitched for him. And his wounds apparently still need constant redressing. Even from non-magical medicine, that's kind of strange. Like, how old are these?
Yeah.
I think they say these are several years old, which is odd, isn't it?
That is weird.
Why are they still bleeding?
Yeah. I mean, I think, there's so many things in this world that can hurt you so bad.
He does put his body through a lot. It's not it's not surprising that he may come unstitched every now and again. So Friedrich has access to some kind of spiritual secret service, it looks like, where he has to dial in and everything.
He's a member of the Veil and can astrally project to some kind of HQ to talk to a human?
Maggie Lillimoon, who is, at first I thought was another stylized monkey character, but no, she's clearly a human. She has no tail. Extremely strange. She's the first and only example we've seen here.
Except the face and the dragon. Humans seem to be deeply tied in with, like, the ultra-mysterious occult stuff. Friedrich, it's hard to tell if it's an astral projection or not, but he does appear to be more possum-sized compared to her than normal-sized, as he typically appears in the rest of the comic. And he has been practicing and mastering astral projection for the purpose of both communication and something else. He's getting stronger and stronger about it. There's a mention of his backup plan.
Yeah.
They also mentioned that Poppy is a candidate for someone called the Iron Matron.
Yeah, a name that came up in chapter, I want to say 4. I'm not sure, like, at this point I was thinking Iron Matron candidate implies that many people could be the Iron Matron,
yeah,
or like the incarnation of the Iron Matron, like some kind of Asura.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure how to take that. There's a bit more of that comes out later, but it seems compelling to me.
Yeah.
I feel like there's just not enough detail to form an opinion on it here, though.
Yeah. Because this is supposed to be a teaser. You're supposed to start, like, saying, okay, there's a big picture going on here.
Yeah, teasers and teasers and teasers and teasers. And that is, okay, I feel like I need to start talking about this because it's going to become a problem as we keep going through the comic. This is also a problem that One Piece has. If we've talked about how this story is clearly inspired by One Piece. One Piece feels like at a certain point, One Piece is more lore drops and teasers for stuff that's coming up in a decade's time than it is an actual story that you're reading right now.
Yeah.
Which is a big complaint that I have about it, is that, like, I know that the large epic scope feels cool and is fascinating, but here we have kind of the reverse of it, where it's just too much fucking work for one person to finish. And so a lot of these strings that we're getting left in front of us just go unpulled. Yeah, it's this is what makes Friedrich's expositing back in chapter 4 feel not great. It feels like it was kind of a waste of time. We learned a lot of stuff about dragons that we will only use here and will only apply in that one chapter. I wish that wasn't the case. I understand why it's the case, but, like, I don't like stories that end up being written this way.
Yeah, and it's also, like, I think a lot of this is, like, this is all, so there are large portions of it, yeah, it's set up for stuff we don't see. Because this wasn't going to be the last bit of dragons. This was not going to be the last time
I know, and I don't doubt that, but I'm saying here in the state that the comic is finished in, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we find out, okay, so the reason the possums were smuggling god blood is because they're non-magical, so magic detection methods don't work on them.
Right. Poda is also still in play. She has whisked away 36,000 people, and we don't yet know why, and correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think we ever learn why.
From my digging, we don't.
Okay, great. And then there's page 9. Let's get real here. All you really need to be concerned with is Canopy's godblood problem. Run me through that list again, would you? And I just groaned because it's like, Friedrich, honey, you're great at expositing. Hit me with some more pages, will you? I was like, fuck off.
Yeah. There's some details in here too where it's just like, some of this stuff, with the way it gets explained later, could have just been explained there because it's explained more succinctly later in a way that fits in with the narrative. That's, like, the frustrating thing there is, like, it's talking about what the possums are doing. We get that later in a way that fits in with the story.
You could see it's not just that the backgrounds on this particular page are simplified. That's fine. It's that this page, more than the others, has finally become more text than image, which is not usually something you want to do in a comic book if you can avoid it. I feel like this might be one of the pages where Everett finally realized that they didn't want to draw this much anymore. And I'm not upset about that, but, like, there were more efficient ways to do this, and I'm just kind of sad that it didn't go that way.
So, a lot of this could have been, like, stuff that came up as, like, the results of it came up, too. So much of this is strange, because a lot of it is, hey, here's this great little detail, here's this little detail. This detail doesn't really seem like it matters now, but here's an aside, here's a comment, here's a thing you see. And then other times it's, yeah, here's just an info dump.
Yeah, and then we get page 10 and 11 with a fairly interesting effect. Lily lets some information slip that she shouldn't have and has to cover her own tracks by wasting what's called a spatial ticket, which interestingly is a temporal ticket. It goes back by 1 minute and rewinds Friedrich's memory to not hear what she said.
Yes, it's just saying, hey, there's time travel of this story.
Yeah, there's time travel, and also, like, these people, referring to the sloppy way they fix the world and keep the status quo going, are not above fixing their mistakes with petty shit. Fixing petty mistakes with magic that's way too powerful for it. We also hear the word prophecyure, which is maybe one of my favorite portmanteaus I've ever heard.
Yeah, prophecyure. Yes, yes. Kit's dad, Renard, had a prophecyure.
And on the final page of this chapter has a couple of interesting things. One is that the sky outside in this dimension, universe, dimension, world, is blue.
It's blue.
Not pink. Which I'm not sure what the significance of that ever is. Two is that there's a possum on the ceiling who's serving tea. Her gravity is apparently reversed. But the gravity of the teapot is not reversed. It's just a regular teapot weighed down by gravity, but she walks on the ceiling somehow.
Yeah.
Also that she is a possum in this universe.
Yes.
A possum let into this veil of ignorance beyond, like, this extra universal place, which had a lot of weird implications for me. Does it mean that only possums are able to interact with magic forces outside the veil, being immune to magic and all that? And where the hell is this? Question mark.
Yes. Both of the reason the possum is upside down is actually consistent with possums being immune to magic.
Okay. I thought it was something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. It's a hint of what's going on.
I'll leave that to you when we get there.
Yeah.
We're going to have a lot of wrapping up to do here at the end of this story. I worry that that might actually be the case with a lot of comics we read.
Yeah.
Chapter 7, Diplomatic Disunity. Chapter 7 is the penultimate chapter.
Yeah. This is good, but I also noticed stuff is going faster in it. So I sort of started to have less notes because it's establishing a new status quo for Poppy politically.
She's dating Kit Darling, the queen. She has a cell phone.
Yeah, she has a cell phone.
Cell phones are just in this universe now. Who cares? Fuck it. We got to pages 6-7. I notice Lily gets ignored in a lot of these pages, or perhaps is, like, just staying out, is just not involved on purpose. It's sad, but it's also maybe that's what she wants right now.
Yeah, she doesn't seem to be actively angry at Poppy anymore.
Yeah, but she's also not participating, which is, you know, something about this. And it's revealed that Kit has a literal bedroom, like a bed the size of a room.
Yeah, and what they're actually doing is Poppy is tossing Kit around like a Nerf ball on the bounciness of the bed. The little Kit drawing here is so fucking cute. I was disarmed by how adorable the euphorically happy Kit getting bounced on the fucking bed. Ah, so cute. So cute. This is so cute.
And then we have page 9, where we meet Lily's gonna get a tutor, who's that lady that Kit bumped into on the staircase last chapter. Yeah. Mrs. Lamb, I could teach you anything you want to know. Anything? Absolutely. Anything at all. And Lily says, I want to learn how to stop loving my mom for real so I won't feel bad when she dies.
Right to the heart. Right to the heart.
That's a teacher who's out of her depth. Miss Lamb gets the brilliant idea to teach Lily about the arts.
Oh, my God!
Of the depressed and self-loathing. And I was just like, oh, I'm seen. I am seen.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, wow. Oh, a real winter art school feels.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
Sorry,
I'm sorry, 17-year-old me. You don't know what you're getting into.
God, 17-year-old me. I know you're making great progress, but you don't understand.
You have page 11 where she says, "Mom, I drew this for you." And Poppy says, "Wow, this looks nothing like me." Which is another example of Poppy Opossum having staggeringly little emotional intelligence in strange moments.
Yeah.
I was like, is she getting worse about it? I couldn't tell.
I can't tell, like, is this supposed to be, is she stressed, or is this sort of a flanderization of Poppy? Because she seemed to be much more perceptive earlier.
It could be a little of each.
Poppy starts martial arts training.
Yeah.
Wait.
First of all, hang on.
Yes, that's
first
true.
Of all, we have Petunia and Chickadino in these amazing golf sport outfits, which I wanted to scream when I saw them both together. They're so precious.
To call back, these characters keep having new outfits. Poppy has a whole new outfit in this chapter. Yeah. Every chapter, she has a new variant of an outfit. Every chapter. And yes, there's a new outfit for Chickadino, a new outfit for Petunia.
He looks like he's about to go on the top deck for a game of shuffleboard. He is directly threatening her with their energy budget because he can do that now.
And he wants
complete control over their energy supply.
And then she turns around, slaps who she thinks is Chickadino, and slaps Poppy.
Yeah, in this really great two-point shot where panel one is the impact and panel two has broken the gutter and gone into the other panel.
Yes, and
although because it's Poppy Opossum, a dislocated jaw is like no big deal. She just snaps it back into place.
Yeah.
Which is funny and gross. True to form.
She then starts doing, you know, intense, seemingly impossible martial arts training.
Tai Chi, question mark?
She has to sort balls being thrown at her.
At top speed. Yeah. It's like, yeah. Children can do this exercise, Poppy! Children have done this exercise! This is such a brilliant dark line. I love it. There's so many layers to that bit.
great little montage. Poppy campaigning. Poppy trying to reach out to the community of possums, Poppy training, Poppy becoming more and more involved with Kit, Lily's drawings getting better and better.
And Kit having less and less time. Let's take a bit of a break here, because I need to step away for just a second. We're back.
Yes, page 17 of issue 7. And Poppy is doing a meeting, which brings a whole lot of creatures throughout the city together, including some of the gang members. Including the giant cat lady.
Who Poppy remembers from the shape and heft of her tits.
Yes.
which is really funny. That's how she remembers that lady, because that's all she saw of that lady.
It's just huge tits.
Big women!
Big women!
We're really leaning in on the lesbianism angle here in the story as time goes on, which I like. Page 18, Poppy says, "Your pride isn't worth jack. Pride is what leads to petty squabbles, broken childhoods, and watching your best friends burn to death in the embers of a pointless revolution." Dark.
Poppy is an ex-revolutionary. She also has her fangs very visible and very menacingly drawn in that panel.
Yeah, it's a cute touch in Everett's art style that the meaner and more real somebody has to be, the more they look like an animal and less like a cute cartoon.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Yeah.
And on page 19 and 20, we meet a new candidate for the best character in the whole comic, Harry Hopperfield, at your service.
Harry Hopperfield!
My only notes here are, "Harry Hopperfield, I have just met you and I love you." in all capitals.
Even in this, the last real chapter of the comic, we have introduced a new character with an amazing design, Only now I realize
amazing gimmick because he's a stage magician and not a wizard,
but also a wizard.
He's also a wizard.
He's a wizard who's also a stage magician.
Poppy, don't clap. He's just doing basic witchcraft. Oh, what's this? Someone should do a better job cleaning behind her ears.
Pulls
she
out,
got an impossum, but that's impossible.
That's impossible.
I was like, this one panel made me laugh harder than anything else in the story has so far.
Oh, he's a fucking rabbit. That's why he digs holes.
He also tries to drop some lore on Poppy on that page, and she just says, oh no, shut up, I don't really care. But good news. I'm sorry, good news. The other best character in the comic returns.
Yulala has a talk show. The comic, again, the compression is getting harder. Most of these scenes are 2 or 3 pages, and we're covering a lot in all of them.
Yeah, which this is actually something I should mention. This is at least something that I do when I try to write stories. In my opinion, for a comic, a good story beat is 4 pages.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's not standard. That's just how I do it. I try to not have a story beat go on for much longer than 4 pages if it doesn't have to. And also, if I can't fill 4 pages with a story beat, it should probably be secondary, like side detail or something like that. And that's actually about the pace that Poppy 7 is going at. So it didn't seem all that weird to me.
Yeah.
But I can't deny that it was accelerated. Like, the Yulala section is only 2 pages long.
Yeah, it's not that it's weird, it's that it's something I noticed.
Yeah.
Like, it's good. I think the pacing in this chapter feels where it should have been at a couple of the other stories.
Uh-huh.
But we also know, oh, this is it. This is the last full comic chapter.
Polya has a bit of a nerd out moment about architecture. Friedrich is babysitting a bunch of mice. Like, as this goes on, it just feels like I'm rattling stuff off a list, which I can't help but feel like this may have been written as an outline first and then never finalized into a script. Because it really does feel like I'm reading an outline of plot points at this stage.
Yeah, exactly. I started having less and less notes here because there are less illustrated details. And all of a sudden, oh, plot just intrudes after, like, we have montages establishing the development
montage,
of all this
montage
stuff.
Montage montage montage
and it's kind of funny because we had a montage earlier that kind of got us to the same place,
yeah,
and then we get another one that just establishes we're still in that place.
Yeah, we don't really get to anything important until page 30, where Fern, who's one of the possums we saw back in chapter 3, her husband's been kidnapped. And she specifically tells Poppy to read a letter, but not read it aloud. What's explained here is that Arthur Chikadino's lucky star power is that he will listen to things or objects that he has touched can become ears for him, which has been foreshadowed way, way earlier, although the specifics of how it worked were not told until right now.
It's also, I liked that too, because it sort of implied he had some sort of psychic power or whatever, and I like that it's a very JoJo-esque, like, hey, this thing that seems pretty innocuous is actually terrifyingly powerful.
He has the little birdie room full of people typing things on papers and putting them in boxes, which I thought was a very cute and equally menacing term for it. Oh, a little birdie told me this. A little birdie told me that. A little birdie told me exactly where your husband is. And if you try to get out from under my grip, I'll just send you his ears in a box.
Yes, we get more establishing stuff. There's so much establishing stuff in this chapter. God.
Awful lot of stuff gets established here, which is a huge drag. Friedrich correctly deduces that Kit Darling is the person who's receiving the illegal shipments in the first place, which we knew that. But here he finally puts together a couple of big pieces that we probably haven't put together. The tank was emptied because it's meant to be storing all that blood.
And while this is a big text dump of all of them, that establishes a bunch of stuff that we kind of didn't... That's what's extra frustrating about the interstitial chapter is... All of the important stuff in that interstitial was just covered there. And as much as that was just a big text dump, it also diegetically fit more. Both Friedrich and Poppy spring into action to try and essentially fix everything while most of the castle is under the control of Chikadino.
So, where is it, Paige? Issue 7, page 36. Poppy confronts Kit about the crisis. But that's actually not the important thing here. I want to read the author's note on page 36 of issue 7. A very real issue that must be confronted is my declining motivation regarding working on Poppy as a comic and, in general, doing art as a career. Drawing comics was, frankly, never really my passion. I had never once before Poppy drawn more than a page or two of comic for myself before giving up out of disinterest. I do enjoy storytelling. I enjoy writing. But I don't actually care for art all that much outside of the character designing process. Over the past few years, Poppy has gone from a fun project I started to push myself to improve to an obligation that I sort of resent but keep doing because it covers my bills. You know, a job. Except jobs don't usually entail people on the internet sending you death threats or making up rumors about you because your worth ethic's bad or they don't like which one of your characters is kissing another. End quote. That's horrible. That's burnout. That's burnout and a... This would have been released in like 2017. The comic was made still in the throes of some truly vile periods for capital F fandoms. Like,
yeah.
Gamergate was still recent. Kiwi Farms was still around. Trump was president. It's not hard to imagine how unpleasant things got over how petty things were.
I think it's also important to point out that this was also the height of like sort of a lot of the Tumblr wars, like yeah. A lot of the fandom wars were like, it wasn't because, yeah, there was all of the right wing stuff, but there was also the arguments over stuff like, okay, what is the ethical morality of Steven Universe? Right.
Yeah.
Like that kind of thing. Like, is this a thing? Like, you know, there was so much about that. And there was so, you know, like...
A story depicts murder, therefore it endorses murder. You know, and just crazy yeah. takes like that.
And or the story doesn't endorse murder enough. Or, like, there were layers to this. And I would acknowledge, I kind of sucked during this era. I wouldn't send fucking anything to the creators, though. God,
no,
fuck.
No. Death threats are always unacceptable.
Yeah, but yeah, it sounds like burnout. It is maybe this feels really sad because seeing the previous pages, that doesn't look like somebody who I shouldn't speculate, but like, God, there was so much passion for it early on.
Yeah, but I can also tell that Everett is a character designer first and maybe a writer second and probably doesn't enjoy writing comics as much as they would just designing characters. Designing characters is clearly their favorite part of this, designing new people, yeah. Designing new ideas and concepts. But actually tying them all together into a cogent narrative is a ton of work. It can't be overstated how much work it would be to make a comic like Poppy Opossum. Even if you had a team of 5 people, just... diffused across different tasks and different roles, it would still take years. It's amazing that they got this far, and I don't feel bad that they stopped. I wish they could have stopped under calmer and more pleasant reasons, but if they were not happy doing this, then they should have stopped. That was correct. That was the correct thing to do. Like, my desire to finish this comic does not trump their need to be happy and healthy.
This is unusual in that we have so many details about why they stopped, though.
Yeah.
A lot of comics don't have that. A lot of comics just stop updating one day and the creator disappears from the internet. We're still only 25% of the way through the story.
What? Where'd you see that?
That's at the bottom of the long, long thing that they wrote. Like,
it is? We're only 25%? Oh my god.
Yeah.
If they did keep pace, if they did finish in 2018, Poppy Opossum would have taken 15 more years to wrap up. No, that was probably not going to happen no matter what.
Yeah. I would have thought we were at the midpoint of the story.
I would too. It's a surprise.
Because we are moving towards the turn where, like, oh, and here's all the
stuff. This feels like an act 2 twist. Yeah.
I'm sort of inclining, because I know we've gone on for a while, but moving through some of this quickly, because that's kind of what the comic is feeling like at this point.
Yeah, the revelation is that Chikadino, because he's signed off on all the deals for the Dragon Blood Supply, he is listening to the entire city's electrical grid. So now he essentially controls the government because he has a credible way to accuse Friedrich of regicide or conspiracy. Friedrich goes to town, having enchanted every single blade in the armory to work for him. In one of the raddest fight sequences in the series. And there's a lot of like casual artistic nudity between Kit and Poppy here, which this much of it I feel like was intentionally put in the story to upset readers who didn't like this ship.
Poppy and Kit are coming to a thing because they're both of them were sort of using the other, but also that developed into an actual relationship at the same time.
Poppy wanted somebody to take care of Lily because Poppy's got 6 more years in her tops. Kit wanted someone to lean on. But again, just being able to see somebody's face doesn't mean you can trust them. That's not enough.
We get lots of really rad fight scenes.
And there's this fun shot at the end of page 46 where he can hear everybody's thoughts or everybody's audio in the back of his head. He hears Kit intending to confess everything that happened between her and him, but there's also one where you could see someone is screaming, "Mary, put down the gun!" fine. And that is the last we ever hear of Mary Moonshine, the best character in fiction.
Yeah.
Damn. Kit is heading home to try and cure her dad and confess at the same time. Chikadino basically has complete run of the castle and the government. Friedrich's under arrest and being shipped off somewhere, and Poppy Opossum has a hit put out on her life. That's the end of that's page 50, and that's quote unquote it for Poppy as a comic. After this, it becomes text and illustrated prose. Here endeth the visuals, and I want to say bravo. This is better than many comics ever dream of being, and I'm so sorry art didn't work out for you as much as you would have wanted, and you're not wrong to want to stop. My ears bow to Everett. Excellent.
Yes, just incredible comic.
As we go into chapter 8, chapter 8 Misdirection is written basically as like an illustrated novel with small like interstitial illustrations.
There is a paragraph here that I just copied outright that I thought was also, they brought because Boris is watching a cartoon and is disappointed with a reboot. And Poppy says, "Look, Boris," she placed a head at his shoulder, "we're all dealing with jarring changes right now. Sure, it's a big pain, but sometimes you have to make a compromise if you want something important to you to continue. And hey, there's some advantage. If it wasn't for the format changes,
this entire scene would have been cut for time.
But you'd only show up for one panel as a plot device."
Hey!
So
what really do we learn here? We learn that Chikadino has known about the Spectre of Fate for a long, long time. And Friedrich is put through an elaborate torture scheme by a pair of cats named Kuroskuro and Chirashiro, which is an adorable pair of names. I like the puns there, but like this leads us into some pure Clive Barker shit. There's several pages dedicated to this torture sequence and all the wonderful ramifications of it. They transfer his consciousness into a dummy body called Mr. Moxie, who can only feel pain. Looks like a fucking Five Nights at Freddy's monster.
Yeah, and that because his consciousness is the body, he feels everything.
He feels everything, even the arm that he doesn't have anymore. He feels it crumpled to pieces underneath their weight. Oh, it's sickening. It's a shame that like this won't go anywhere.
Yeah. There were a lot of comments about, oh, you don't want to just see pages of people talking. And it's like, there were times when pages of people talking worked really well in this comic.
The facial expressions make that work. I had no complaints about those.
Yeah, but also...
I understand that talking heads is something you try to avoid in comics because, you know, it's a visual medium. But, like, an awful lot of human interaction is talking heads.
We get a lot of very striking individual images, though. But yeah, a lot of this just is like, oh, this is wrapping up. We're setting and raising stakes that will not be resolved.
And then we get into the fight scene between Petunia and Poppy, which is really the only thing that got illustrated to any extent in this piece.
Yeah.
I feel like Everett probably wanted to illustrate this more than anything else. It just looks really cool. There's action lines, there's flow lines, there's incredible, like, there's a great double page spread of Petunia with the conjured arms and the mandala. That also especially made me think a lot of Asura's Wrath.
Yeah.
The video game, if you ever saw that. The incredible dynamism that they use with lots of Hindu mythology. But it gets ground to a halt because what's his name? Alvis? Mr. Quibble intervenes. Mr. Quibble
intervenes, yeah. Right as Poppy's heart is giving out.
Yeah, and Petunia ends up slashing him, accidentally, but slashing him in the exact same way her mother did on the other cheek, which I thought was quite apropos. But that does feel like a story beat that should have come much later for some reason. I can't tell you why exactly, but the timing of this fight scene doesn't feel right. I feel like Petunia would give Poppy a bit more trust than this, than hauling off and working for Chikadino.
It feels like this was a scene that was definitely in Everett's head, would be my guess.
Yeah, but I feel like it may have been moved.
It would have made more sense for Petunia to maybe hunt Poppy for a while, or like try to seek out Poppy for some reason, or get her when maybe. She tried to go back to the city. There's a lot of configurations of how this could have played out, because essentially she views Poppy as a threat to her stability.
There's a bit of a thing here between Chikadino and Poda.
Yeah.
Then they end up working on the same side because Poda becomes convinced that Chikadino is an agent of fate.
I'm still not sure if it would not shock me if the twist is that Chikadino isn't. He just has enough information to seem like he is.
Yeah, which I feel like that might be the angle. And that is our final page. Our last shot is of Chikadino, Renard, and another a Lion King.
Yeah, literal the previous Lion actual king. It seems like Renard maybe overthrew this guy, but we don't know.
That is the end of Poppy Opossum. It does not continue beyond Twitter ephemera, which I believe you have for us.
I have quite a bit of Twitter ephemera, yes.
You've done quite a good bit of work collecting all this. Thank you.
Yes. I tried my fucking damnedest to find as much of it. Generally, the arc, from the details I can figure out, is that a bunch of people were gonna die, obviously. Uh-huh. Probably Kit. I think Kit would have died, because I noticed Poppy was on the run for regicide. There might be something definitive. You can't search Twitter. This was all stuff that I dug up from Reddit and Google.
Yeah, Kit has some death flags on her at the moment.
Yeah, like, hey, once we get through this, everything will be okay. I just have to tell all the people the things, and it'll all be good. Yeah. So obviously she can't do that.
Yeah, no, and also her family do not see possums as people. The idea that they would stand up to her, that they would accept her dating a possum, is ridiculous.
I do absolutely know several details. Friedrich was going to die. In one of the April Fool's things, it says that the entire cast will be replaced with cute robots. And in case you noticed that Friedrich's was way more detailed, that's because Friedrich's astral projection was going to allow him to have a more perfect cop-like soul to put into a mechanical body.
Well, that's sick as hell.
Yeah, Friedrich is going to be a robot.
Robo Friedrich.
Yeah, that would have been really cool. Mary is, I forget the exact term, but what one of the super magic ladies who's important to everything. It is
it's just her, yeah.
Yeah, it's just her. She is not the descendant of this person. She is that person.
Wow, that's fun.
Yeah, she's one of the allusions to this, and this is also one of the actual cuter details from digging into this, is that the veil is like both a place and a group. And it's because the world... Yeah, Flora is a flat planet that was turned into a sphere to imprison an evil deity within it. And all of the people there are kind of collateral. I believe that is the Hand of Fate, who has a sick fucking design.
Like, originally it was just going to have a, like, scraggly, like, animal teeth, but then Everett realized that having extremely symmetrical human teeth was actually creepier somehow.
And yeah, essentially the arc was eventually going to be Poppy has to confront this thing, and I presume it has something to do with, would not shock me if it's because possums are not magical, which again, the upside down thing, remember that.
So possums are not magical, but even though this world doesn't use physics like we think it does, down is always the same.
Like, you always are pulled towards the earth.
The purple is a magically created sky, so you don't realize you're inside the world, basically. Because it's a hollow, I forget which side it is, but it's one side or the other. The blue sky of the veil, that is the real sky. The reason possums are that side is because everyone is oriented towards, like, what we're going to be the possums who are not affected by the
enchantment, we're not affected by the gravity of the world instead of our direction. And possums are pulled towards the earth.
You're losing me here, honey.
Sorry. God.
I'm not really sure where we're going with this.
Okay.
Do you know how the story was meant to end?
That's the trick. It seems that Poppy was supposed to confront the Hand of Fate. I'm trying to explain. Yes, apologies for trying to explain the incredibly complicated and convoluted physics.
You're trying to explain something that didn't actually get written. It's okay if there are gaps.
Yeah, there are a lot of gaps, and I will say that the last couple pieces of Poppy art that Everett has put out, which did get put out this year, were of Mary.
So it's time to conclude, I guess, since we normally at this point in our format, we would extrapolate to where the comic could go. But we were specifically told where the comic would go.
Yeah.
Which is we should enjoy that. That's a luxury we won't usually have.
Oh, absolutely. There's so many comics that that we'll never know where they would have gone.
So Poppy Opossum, I am sad that the author had to duck out of it for their own reasons. I'm sad that they had a fan base that apparently was supportive of them, but like that they also had to put up with fan backlash in the time period they were making it. It's one of those things where like I can't rescue every darling project that I want to read. I don't have money. I don't have time. And it's okay that some things don't make it. But wow, I do hurt that this one didn't.
What a hell of a comic. What a hell of a comic.
Unbelievable. Yeah. That they weren't a comic artist at first, which you can tell kind of in the way they laid out their pages, how they struggled to communicate hits in that very first issue. And how that dropped away immediately. They just got it, like, in a snap.
I'm floored. I think what I'm actually probably the most sad about isn't that this didn't finish, but this seems to have... There was sort of a follow-up. There was, like, a second comic they did, but that hasn't been updated.
Yeah, but that appears to have burnt them out just as bad. And I'm just sorry that Morby had to go through all that.
It's horrible.
As someone who also has burnt out before, like, a lot... I feel it. But that's the time period. This is what I would call not a late period webcomic. I'd call it like a middle period webcomic. Because like the webcomic era is still going on, but it's now consolidated onto platforms like Webtoon. It's unusual to see comics with their own websites these days.
This is one of the last gasps of this sort of older format. But like, yeah, this was after the initial super amateur stuff. Into the professionals who are trying to do something.
But we will discuss that more as we go on. I take it you liked this one.
I fucking love this one. No, I mean, I just think it's a staggering accomplishment. So much of it happened in so short a time frame, too.
Yeah.
Like, the first 3 years are maybe the most intense work I can think of for a webcomic. Like, almost always full color, super complex backgrounds.
Year one on its own was insane.
Yeah, incredibly complex backgrounds, complex character designs. A story that it might be overambitious, but it was overambitious because like delivering everything was going to be hard. All of the setup was shocking. Like there's a lot of criticism that could potentially be made of like it's, you know, holding back stuff and its little setups, but...
Yeah, like Everett demonstrated that every time they did get to pull off a payoff, they did it.
Yeah.
And any time that they got a chance to land the hit that they set up a few chapters before, they did it successfully, and it's cool.
so much of this is so beyond what I expect. It's stunning. It's just a stunning work of art.
I can't wait for whatever we discuss next to be a huge disappointment.
It's going to be a real countdown.
There's something good to see in every webcomic. It's just that we started off on a real high.
We just shared one of the best webcomics, maybe even best comics I've ever read. Oops.
As one does. So where do we go from here? You want to talk about Problem Sleuth?
Problem Sleuth would be fantastic.
I think it might have to be Problem Sleuth.
I think Problem Sleuth makes too much sense.
That's the one that sticks out to me. Ooh, yeah. Maybe.
Yeah, let's do Problem Sleuth.
You got it.
That's cool.
I love that rousing debate we had. Okay, yeah. Folks, see y'all next time. See
you next time.
You can find me at Cups of Jade at most places.
You can find me at Automatic Tiger most places, but most especially co-host.
All right, we will see you then.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Bye.